This is Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan, the podcast.
From Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Welcome along to the show. Now, a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about gambling. And I know many people out there have a problem. It's as bad as alcoholism or drug addiction or any other addiction, I suppose. The thing about gambling is, of course, it costs a lot of money. It destroys families. People steal from each other. Husbands steal from wives. Wives steal from husbands. Children steal from their parents just to feed the habit. I've heard of people losing houses over gambling. One guy I had on the air 7 years ago actually blew the mortgage, the remortgage on his house on gambling. At one stage, he told me he had €200,000 in cash in the boot of his car. And he lost it all. Every single bit of it. Because let's be clear about it, there are no winners in gambling. The only winners in gambling are the people who own those companies you see advertised on television every night. You know, Betfair and Bet123 and Paddy Power and Boyle Sports and all those other ones. They're the only winners. They're the ones making profits. There are very few winners outside of that. I know some people will claim that, oh yeah, they've won, but a lot of those people put their money back on the horse or the football or whatever it happens to be. We'll be talking about gambling later on because the woman did find out that her husband is gambling. She never knew about it, but she checked his phone, his bank account, and £600 roughly a month is going out on gambling. And basically, her friends are saying, get rid of him, leave him. It's not going to change. He'll never change. I want to know what you think in that situation. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is religion. And it's a topic that comes up on the show on a regular basis because people are quite divided on it. You either believe in God or you don't believe in God. And Ireland, of course, has gone through a huge change over the last probably 30 years. We did go from a country being probably the most religious country in the world, possibly close to it anyway, certainly, to being one of the most least religious. And I suppose a lot of damage was done because of the reports that come out, the Cloyne, the Murphy and all the other reports that come out about sexual abuse. That turned a lot of people away. But that's not the only reason. The other reason, of course, is we have the internet. We have information at our fingertips, things that people maybe put down to being the creation of God in the past, young people particularly, they now have evidence at the touch of their fingers that they can show scientifically where things come from, the mountains, the trees, the rivers, all that kind of stuff, and they don't have to write it off to God anymore, that they can understand things a little bit better. And don't get me wrong, we don't have all the answers, we never will. Ireland's dramatically changed, but a new report commissioned by the Irish Catholic Bishops' Conference is challenging that perception, suggesting that Ireland may still be more religious than people actually think. And according to the report, 31% of Catholics in Ireland say they attend Mass at least once a week, placing Ireland among the more practicing countries in Europe. About a third of Irish adults say they pray every single day, which again puts Ireland towards the higher end compared to other countries in Western Europe. Now, the picture is more complicated when you look at younger people, I suppose. Over the past 20 years, there's been a dramatic drop in mass attendance amongst young people in Ireland. But interestingly enough, the latest data suggests there may be a small rebound with the number of young Catholics attending mass weekly rising from 7 to 17%. That's not to be sniffed at, really, is it? It's a fair bit extra between 2022 and 2024, since COVID, I suppose. And some commentators believe this could point to what they call a quiet revival of religion amongst young people, while others say overall the trend in Ireland is clearly still moving towards secularism. So what's really happening? Well, to discuss this and much more, I'm going to talk to David Quinn in a second, but before I do that, please let me know, are you religious? If you were taking part in a poll like this and asked you, did you go to Mass and do you follow a religion or prescribe to a religion, would you say yes or no? Are you a religious person? Do you believe in a religion? Doesn't matter what religion it is, by the way, but do you believe in a religion, a higher power of some description by definition? Let me know what you think. The number, as usual, is 085 122 55. Send us a WhatsApp. Let me go to David Quinn, journalist and founder of the Iona Institute. David, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
David, it kind of surprises me. Well, actually, no, it doesn't surprise me because when I was in America, I noticed I went to a public speaking event with Byron Donaldson, who's running for governor there, and Benny Johnson, who's another big Twitter personality. And the amount of young people at it was unbelievable, young conservative Christians. Now, I know that's America and it's different, but there does seem to be a little bit of a revival, I've noticed. But why is that? Or why do you think that is?
Yeah, so basically, I think a kind of demarcation needs to be made in our minds between, you know, what's often called the baby boomer generation, that is people born between around, you know, just post-war, so 1945 up to about 1963. So that's the kind of baby boomer generation. So they're people who are in their early 60s to early 80s,
that's me.
Roughly.
That's me, yeah.
Yeah, and me. I'm born in 63.
Yes, that's how it was.
So like our generation grew up where the church was still, you know, pretty dominant. It was beginning to fade as I was becoming growing up into my 20s. But it was still there as a big presence. And there was a lot of rebellion against it. And this was across the Western world generally. And it was a kind of rebellion against all forms of authority, the authority of your parents, even your teachers, the authority of police. It was just the whole counterculture thing, and obviously the authority of clerics and the church, whatever that church may have been. And in a sense, the rebellion was needed because all those forms of authority could often be authoritarian, and that's when abuse wasn't taking place, all right? So it was a kind of corrective to the kind of past heavy-handedness of nearly all forms of authority. Because schools used to be much stricter, for example, and than they've become in the meantime. But if you were born in the year 2000, which means you're going to be 26 this year, you're growing up in a very different world. And a kind of rebellion against an authoritarian, repressive society makes no sense to you because it's not what you're growing up in. You're probably growing up in something that's more like the opposite. So actually, there's almost no forms of authority around the place. There's nothing solid around the place. You're looking around and you're thinking, okay, you know, where do I get meaning from? Where do I get purpose from? All these things would have been quite certain in the past, and people would have felt, in fact, that, again, the baby boomer generation, meaning has been forced down my throat. And that was all got rid of. And now there's quite a lot of people feel at sea. So, again, the experience of somebody born in 2000 is completely different from the experience of somebody born in 1950. And debate about the church in Ireland is still dominated by people who are of the baby boomer generation. And it'll be like, you know, if in 1950, debate was still dominated by people born, and we'd say, I don't know, 1880 or something like that. Okay? Yeah. It would just make no sense. And the concerns of whatever they would have had who were born in 1880, growing up as young adults in the early part of the 20th century. And people born in 1950 have been told their concerns must still be the big ones. So we see an awful lot of anxiety out there, as we know. We see growing rates of depression and so on. This isn't just...
Is there a similar fight back now? Because you're talking about the fight back against that authoritarianism of the church and the guards and the government and everybody else at the time. Mm. But is there a similar fight back now, maybe from young people, who maybe see a secular society that's become too secular or too progressive or too liberal, and they see the only way to behave in a conservative manner is to go back to the church? Because let's be clear about it. The church went from, 41% to 7% attendance amongst Catholics, mass attendance, you know, the space of very few short years. And that was primarily because of what happened, you know, in the Catholic Church and all the revelations in relation to different reports that came out at the time.
It wasn't just the scandals, though, because, I mean, the trend was down anyway, even before the scandals began to...
Wait, but the scandals like, certainly didn't help. That didn't help, obviously.
No.
But, I mean, so what I'm saying is there with young people now, is it something that they want to use to fight back, that they're using? I'm not saying that they don't believe it. Of course they do believe it. But they're using that religion or a purpose to fight back against what they believe is too much secularism or too much liberalism.
So we can frame it in culture war terms, and there might be an element of that. So there does seem to be a bit of evidence from countries like America, for example, that a lot of young fellas in particular, and by young fellas I mean the 18 to 24-year-old age group, so kind of Gen Z or Gen Z, there's a certain number of fellas, it's a minority, but it's there and it's real, and they were kind of coalescing around people like Charlie Kirk, who are sick of the whole kind of toxic masculinity thing. Because if you're in that age group, 18 to 24, you will have grown up, you know, you'll have gone through school as a teenager hearing about toxic masculinity all day long. Mm. And you'll have had that concept shoved down your throat, like Catholicism was once shoved down people's throats in this country. And, you know, like, young people rebel against that kind of thing. And young fellas don't want to be told all day long about toxic masculinity.
There's nothing toxic about masculinity. Mind you, we have the equivalent of femininity as well. Sometimes femininity can be equally as toxic as well, if you really want to go down that
route. But you see, just individual people can be toxic, right?
Absolutely.
That person is toxic, that person is not toxic. But it's all the fellas who are toxic. And so I think the kind of guys who were sort of rebelling against that notion were drawn to Charlie Kirk. Now, there's no equivalent here. to a Charlie Kirk figure. But obviously, in the days of the internet, you can find these figures very easily if you want. But what's also noticeable is, you know, and this is not at a culture war end of things, there's certain apps, you know, which you might call spiritual or religious apps that have become extremely popular. One of them is called Hallow, H-A-L-L-O-W. It's an American-based app, and it has people like the actors Mark Wahlberg and Chris Pratt and the pop singer Gwen Stefani talking regularly about their Catholic faith or how they came back to the Catholic faith, and all kinds of interviews and kind of, you know, there's, you know, daily prayers offered and daily reflections on the Bible or spiritual readings offered. And this is actually very popular. And there's other apps like that out there which are also proving quite popular. So I think what people are looking for, in a world with lots and lots of anxiety, you get a growing number of people turning towards these spiritual / religious apps because they want a bit of peace,
quiet, and reflection,
and they want to be pointed towards more certain meaningful things.
But to say it's meaningful for young people, if nearly 80% of young people believe the church is wrong on moral issues like marriage, homosexuality, and different issues, can the church really claim any kind of moral authority anymore?
Well, you see, again, you know, these young people, and again, like, so, okay, it's a minority of young people. So if you did a vox pop out in the street, you'd find the majority are probably pretty indifferent. So you'd have to go to, you know, a vox pop, first of all, you'd have to find somebody who's willing to say out loud, yes, I'm religious and I go to mass a lot.
Do you think young people are afraid or embarrassed to say they follow religion?
So there's a lot of that. So once upon a time, the social pressure would have been to say, oh yeah, of course I go to mass. Now, if you're young, the social pressure is almost to say, I don't go to mass, even if you do. But you can have a trend whereby more and more people are getting alienated from politics and becoming indifferent to politics and not voting. But you can also have, among a minority, greater intensification of political involvement. So you could have something like, let's say, the Green Movement, for the sake of the argument. In a world where there's more indifference to politics, you could have a minority who are actually becoming more interested in a certain type of politics. And I think something like that might be going on here, that you have, while, you know, a lot of young people are indifferent or hostile to religion, there seems to be something stirring beneath the surface of this 18 to 24-year-old age group in particular, and this is what has brought out...
But the other thing that could also be stirring, and maybe something that you're kind of ignoring as well, is the population has changed. Over 20% of the population now are not indigenously Irish anymore. They're coming from other countries, which would be primarily Christian countries or Muslim countries. So it doesn't matter what religion we're talking about here. We're talking about religion in general. So those figures could be skewed by the fact that, you know, immigration is so high, and we have people coming from religious countries who are part of those statistics.
I think that's part of it. I mean, there was Dublin Diocese recently announced that it has its highest number of adult baptismal candidates in years. Now, a lot of them from the pictures look to be immigrants. But you see, in Ireland, like, you know, what we call the ethnic Irish, nearly all of us were baptized. So we're never going to be presenting ourselves as baptismal candidates, are we? So by definition...
Well, that's kind of traditional, isn't it? But I mean, baptism in Ireland, like communion, confirmation, marriage, funerals, they're kind of traditions. And I suppose if a third of people say they pray daily, how do we know they actually believe in a personal God rather than just the habit or the tradition of... Because when I was a kid, you know, your ma would sort of tell you at night before you go to bed to kneel down beside the bed, and now I lay me down to sleep, I pray to God myself to keep. You remember that one? I mean, we were all taught that. And that was part of tradition rather than part of religion, I suppose. Because my mother wasn't really very religious. My father was.
So, I don't know. I mean, my father wasn't particularly religious. My mother was kind of, she was from the country, she's a Limerick woman, and she would have a kind of, you know, she'd have said the traditional prayers and got to mass every week and that kind of thing. I think she was a reasonably religious woman, but she wasn't in any way kind of heavy-handed about it.
No, my father was heavy-handed, very heavy-handed. No,
I didn't grow up with that. But you see, we're speaking again as baby boomers. So the experience that we had of growing up in Ireland is extremely different from the experience of somebody who was born, you know, in the year 2000.
But it does surprise me. And see, David, you know I'm an atheist, right? Although people have described me as the most Christian atheist because I'm quite conservative in my views and morals, etc. But in saying that, it does surprise me that young people would turn back to religion, because in our day, you know, to get information, we had to go to a library. That was the best we had, unless your parents were very rich and they could afford a set of encyclopedias. Whereas nowadays, the answers to all the questions are there at the touch of a AI now. Even I don't even use Google anymore. I just use AI now all the time. So AI is there. You can ask it any question you want. Where did the mountains come from? Where did the trees come from? You know, how did we evolve as human beings? You know, what are cells? What are atoms? What's the Big Bang? Mm. You can explain most of that. And we don't have answers for everything, obviously, but as time goes on, we get more and more answers. So we didn't have that. So the only explanation we had, like the people of 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, was... Oh, must have been God. God must have did that because we didn't have an answer for it. So it surprises me that young people with all that information and logical information and critical thinking, that they're turning back to God. That surprises me.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, so we don't want to exaggerate what's happening. So again, if you went out onto the street and you were looking for the young people who go to Mass, you'd probably struggle to do it. Okay, so we don't want to think there's nothing like some kind of, no pun intended, Mass event taking place here. What we're seeing is kind of early indications of something happening. So like in France, for example, they had a record, for years, a record number of adult baptisms last year. Westminster Diocese in London has seen something similar. Even ultra-secular Belgium has seen something similar, and you know, a record number of adult baptisms. That numbers are small in overall terms. So I've got to stress that. The numbers are small compared to the general population, but there is a significant increase at the same time. You see, if you were growing up, and you see, like, okay, look up AI, look up the internet, you will also see a lot of extremely solid arguments in favor of the existence of God. Now, we had a bit of a debate about that a few weeks ago, but whether God exists or not is a sociological phenomenon. We are seeing something stirring among this young age group. It's small, but it's there. And you see, again, they're growing up in an extremely hyper-individualistic society where the social bonds that we once took for granted, like family, community, and religion, are all being extremely badly frayed. So we grew up in a time, Niall, when, you know, all of those things could be taken for granted. In fact, the complaint was the family is too strong, we can't escape an unhappy marriage, we have the valley of the squinting windows where our neighbors know everything that we're doing, and religion is too heavy-handed. And so we decided deliberately to start tearing at the social bonds in the name of freedom. But at a certain point, the social bonds become so frayed that you have a lot of people growing up in extremely fragile families, or no family at all because they're completely dysfunctional. There's no church around that they think they can go to. And like what religion brings above all is what sociologists call the three B's, believing, belonging, and behavior. And by behavior means a code of behavior. So believing, belonging, behavior. And in an individualistic society, you end up not having any of those sort of communities. Sport might act as a kind of surrogate for it, but it's a fairly weak surrogate. And so in a highly individualistic society, people are looking for ports that they can sail into, sort of, away from the stormy waters, and feel safe and secure and feel like they belong to something.
No. And I agree. And I just think we were probably a lot more open-minded when we grew up as well. People nowadays are not as open-minded anymore. They're not willing to critique anything. Like, I did just ask AI, by the way, give me one piece of proof that God exists. And it says, proof of the existence of God depends heavily on philosophical, metaphysical, and experimental arguments because it isn't something that can be measured empirically like a physical law. So young people, that's the information they get. Whereas in our day, you know, if we even questioned the existence of God, somebody would say something to you like, well, where do you think the trees come from? So where do you think you come from? And all this kind of stuff. And we didn't really argue with that, but young people do. So that's why I'm saying to you, I'm surprised. I'm not having a go. I'm just saying, I mean, isn't the reality that Ireland is becoming secular like the rest of the world? Now, some people might be delighted with that, but I'm not, by the way, but some people might be delighted with that.
Ireland, I mean, so what you'll find is, as we continue forward, the percentage of people going to Mass is going to continue, and to church generally, is going to continue to decline. Because when you go into Mass, you'll discover, and this won't surprise you, most people are over the age of 65. So it stands to reason they will admit.
And most priests are over the age of 70.
Yeah, so they'll be all dead in due course, right? So Mass attendance in Ireland is actually going to continue to decline.
And where are the priests going to come? I mean, what does this look like in 20 years?
Because there's going to be maybe one priest for every three parishes, whereas once upon a time there would have been three priests per parish.
There's five in my parish.
And a fair number of them are going to be imported priests. And like we had so many priests and nuns, they ended up in places like Africa and South America and so on. So, like we already see in quite a number of parishes around Ireland, African priests working. So there's probably going to be more of that kind of a thing. But again, going forward, so when all the over 65s who are now going to Mass die off, you know, probably Mass attendance in Ireland will be down around 10% or something like that. But I think what is beginning to emerge at the same time is you will get a certain minority of young people who are getting more interested in religion in a society that seems to offer no meaning, no sense of community, no sense of belonging, that they will want to go somewhere where they can actually get the sort of sense of community, get the sense of meaning, get the sense of purpose, get the sense of transcendence and worship, because we are worshiping people. I mean, like, religion occurs naturally everywhere. And it's not simply because, oh, what's causing the storm in the sky, right? It must be a god. It's not just that. People also want to find meaning and purpose. They have a natural sense of reverence, okay? There's something pointing them upwards, okay? It's not just unanswered once upon a time questions like, what's causing the lightning?
But do you think the way we teach religion, but the way we teach religion, the same as the way we teach Irish, and maybe the church is going to have to change to survive, I suppose, in the future, although they say the church can't change, the rules can't change, the book can't change. But do you think that it's going to have to change and be more accepting of skepticism? Like, I'll give you one example of skepticism, right? Many young Christians are skeptical that Jesus even existed. Because
they're not really, though. Anybody thinks that.
But what do you mean there's hardly anybody thinks that? I mean, the story of Jesus Christ. I'm not frowning upon people's religion. I have a huge respect for people who are religious, right? And you know that, David. I wouldn't mock a person's religion. Mm. But when we look historically at the facts around it, if you start to skew the historical facts or make up stories or exaggerate stories, well, then you're going to lose people. And young people now are more intelligent. They can get information.
I think they're neither less nor more.
Well, academically, I think they're more intelligent. They lack common sense, by the way. There was a survey that recently said this generation are actually a bit thicker than the last generation. But in saying that, like, for example, you know, I've looked into this whole thing.
People are reading less.
Yeah, I mean, a person that's born on the 25th of December, had 12 apostles, was born of a virgin birth. That story is... comes from pagan times. It was, you know, it was used for loads of...
Yes, it did.
And by the way, there was historians in that part of the Middle East. There was something like 19 historians. And with one exception to, I think it was one exception to the Roman Empire or something like that, there was a mention of the person called Jesus. There was none of these historians ever mentioned a person called Jesus. There was loads of prophets, by the way. Prophets were common in those days, quite common.
Okay. So, I mean, there's a few...
I'm only asking you critically, you know, this is what people will say.
Yeah, there's a few issues going on here. So, one is there something happening sociologically with respect to religion that is drawing some young people back towards some kind of religion? And the answer appears to be yes.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Okay, so that's one. Now, within our social milieu, that is going to be mainly Christianity for obvious historical reasons, because it's the one in front of us. Now, of course, none of this means that Christianity per se is true, but you might still say the category called religion is true overall in that there is a God, okay? And then you can drill down further. Are specific claims of Christianity like the virgin birth true? That's kind of almost beside the point.
It's not beside the point, because if you want to convince...
But
if you want to convince young people that something is true and something is worth following... Mm. And by the way, I think many of those young people do follow Christianity and do believe in a God, but they do question all the details of it. You know, the fact that some guy and his wife and his two kids built an ark and lasted for 40 days and 40 nights with 1.something million land-faring animals.
So they question all that stuff.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, where do you see the church in 20 years? Is it going to have to change? And I don't mean change to accept transgenderism or change to accept, you know, gay people getting married in a church. I don't mean those kind of changes, because they're the moral standings of the church. But is it going to change in the fact that it allows people to question it and to question, say, some of the stories that are in the Bible that may not be true or could be exaggerated stories over the years or whatever it happens to be? Is it going to allow that? Because... it does seem quite dogmatic in the way that it presents itself, and I think that turns a lot of people off.
Well, I mean, I consider myself to be a reasonably, you know, well-read person, and I'm not going to take claims about this and that totally at face value. Okay, the church says that, so therefore I'm going to accept it. So there was a time when I would have drifted away from the church, mainly, by the way, out of indifference. It wasn't rebellion. I just didn't really care.
Yeah.
And I drifted away. But then when I was living in Australia, and I would have come across some evangelical Christians, and they were, you know, deeply devout, practicing Christians. And I never really come across that before, because here it was all by convention. And these are people who are living out Christianity by strong commitment. And that impressed me. And I said, okay, what's going on here? And I began to read and think a lot more about this sort of thing. But the first question, of course, to be asked, if you're examining religion and you're a person who's interested in kind of reading and so on, does God exist? So that's the first question. And then the second question becomes then, okay, is Jesus who Christians say he is? That is he the Son of God? All right? And did he rise from the dead? Now, if you, A, establish in your own mind, yes, there is a God, B, Jesus was the Son of God and he rose from the dead, after that, everything else is a detail. If there's a God, compared with that, everything else is a detail. So people shouldn't get too hung up about, you know, was there an ark built thousands of years ago?
No, but as I said, because they're academically intelligent, you know, they can look up the God of Horus, they can look up the God of Mithras, they can look up, you know, the God of Krishna, and find out that those stories, which were long before the birth of Jesus Christ, are more or less exactly the same stories, born in the 25th.
But they're not exactly the same stories.
They are. The 12 apostles died, came back 3 days later. I'm not suggesting for a minute the story is fake, but people are allowed to question it. And what I'm saying to you is, if you question it, people get angry.
Of course they're allowed to question it. But you see, look, Christianity arises out of Judaism, essentially, all right? Judaism was extremely strong on being distinct from the pagan religions. Okay, that's the only reason there is a Judaism still in existence, is because it set itself apart as a different kind of religion, monotheistic for a start, all right? There is one God. And making sure that it was separated from the pagan religions in all kinds of ways. So they were not going to be taking pagan stories and suddenly grafting them onto Judaism when they had spent their history trying to do the
opposite. So are you telling me that it's just a coincidence? Are you telling me just a coincidence those stories were all more or less exactly the same?
But you see, they're not, okay? So if you take the story of the resurrection of Jesus, right? So if you take these other gods, okay, who, you know, according to mythology, rose from the dead.
Yeah.
No movement. There was no eyewitnesses who said, I saw this God crucified on the cross. I saw this particular God being buried. And then 3 days later, I met this slain, but that's because they were buried in the tomb again.
That's because there were 6,000.
Jesus had followers.
Yeah, but David, they were 6,000 years ago. But they were 6,000 years ago. We wouldn't have the records. At least in 2,000 years ago, you might have some records.
But you see, what you've got to look at when you're examining Christianity and the claims around the resurrection is Jesus had followers, okay, who followed him for the 3 years, saw him being crucified, saw him being buried, and then began to travel the known world saying he rose from the dead. If they did not believe that was true, okay, why would they be willing to die for something they knew was a lie? There's no other religious story.
You're telling me that based on what is written in the Bible. I'm taking your word for
it. It was all written within the lifetime of the eyewitnesses.
But
right?
Tell me historically where
no
Jesus
other
is mentioned.
Religion was something equivalent.
With the exception of the Bible. With the exception of the Bible and the writings of the Bible, there were many books, by the way. The Bible was taken from many different books that were written at the time, right? But with the exception of the Bible and those books written in the Bible, give me historical evidence that a person called Jesus existed, the Jesus that we know and many people love, existed. And there isn't that much evidence at all. So what I'm coming back to the point is that unless the church is willing to accept criticism, unless the church is willing to accept that people may not believe parts of it, and the church is willing to explain a little bit more or have debates around these things. But the problem is we've seen in Ireland for the last 50 or 60 years is it's quite dogmatic in its view in relation to the way we believe it. You either believe the story is true or you're not part of the club.
Well, you see, we're kind of gone off down all kinds of.
We are, Dave. Sorry, because it's an interesting conversation.
Because remember, what this whole item has begun with is there something stirring among a minority of young people that is creating greater openness to religion? And I think the answer to that is yes.
It is. And David, I have actually gone way over time as well, and I'd love to have a much longer conversation about it. Maybe we can someday. That'd be a great idea.
Okay. Listen, no problem. Thanks for the opportunity.
David Quinn, journalist and obviously founder of the Iona Institute. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. And the question we're asking our listeners today is, have you turned back to religion? Are you religious? Do you consider yourself religious? And why is there, well, there seems to be, from what David is saying and from what the figures are saying, according to the Catholic priest or the Catholic bishop, should I say, there seems to be a turn back to religion again. Let me go to John, hold on, I have to take a quick short break and I'll be back after this.
This is Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan, the podcast.
From Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.